We are joined right now in the studio by Susan Brown of the Chapel Hill Public Library. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And we didn't get a chance to talk about this last week, but we kind of hinted at
it.
We've got the announcement that we can make now about this event that's coming up next Wednesday, which is going to be really, really cool.
It is. We were just pulling together the details last week, but next Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. in Meeting Room B at the library, we are launching a new series we're calling Between the Lines. And it's something that we've wanted to do for a while. It's a community forum where we get folks together to talk about an issue that's of interest, whether it comes from the national headlines, there's the Between the Lines thing, regional, state, or local. If the community is talking about it, we want to have a forum for folks to get together. So our first issue, and they're not always issues-based. They could be based around any number of things. Mm-hmm. But what we're doing next week is we are bringing Omar Curry. Mr. Curry is the third-grade teacher who recently resigned from Eflin Cheeks Elementary after the controversy of reading a picture book called King and King to his third-grade classroom. So many people were asking about this book.
Yes.
And when this was in the news, the holds went from zero to like 95. And anytime somebody's talking about a book, we're interested. So we're going to have
this. Because this was a book I'd never heard of before.
I'd never heard of it either.
Yeah, yeah. And
so we are going to bring Mr. Curry. He's going to open the forum by reading the book.
Nice.
He's going to do what he did that started this whole kerfuffle.
Hullabaloo.
Yes. And then we're going to have a panel of folks. So we're going to have Mr. Curry himself. The mayor is going to actually moderate the discussion. I'm going to welcome folks, but the mayor's going to moderate. We will have Brian Sturm, who is at UNC in the library school. He is an expert on children's literature. We're going to have someone from Frank Porter Graham, who's an expert on early education and diversity. We are trying to get somebody from the sort of school admin world. We're still working on some folks. And then we're going to have the community there to be the other folks talking about this.
Awesome.
So it'll be a panel discussion with lots of opportunity for folks to talk. And we're super excited.
That's going to be really cool. So that's next week, Wednesday, 6:30?
6:30. We are expecting a good crowd.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to see if I can get the last half hour off of work so I can come to
this
thing.
There you go.
This
is going to be really
exciting.
You totally should.
Yeah.
And even come afterwards because I think it'll go for a good hour and a half.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
We got the word out officially yesterday, and it's out there. So.
I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah.
So,
and we hope for the future it could be, you know, if... About anything. If something
this happens
in North Korea.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And there's always something crazy happening in North Korea. But let's say something crazy happened there and it was in the news and everybody's talking about it. Well, we could pull together folks and pull together a forum about that. Or it could be any number of things. Local, national, whatever.
And this just goes to show you, and you know, part of the purpose of you and me,
I think, meeting here
and talking books every week is like every single week we start emailing with each other earlier in the day, like, oh, what should we talk about this week? And there's always something in the news. There's always something exciting that's happening, and we can always come up with 6 or 7 different book recommendations that will inform your understanding
Absolutely.
Of this particular issue. So the library is a perfect place for discussions like these.
Yes, it is.
Yes,
Aaron.
It is.
Yeah, that's what libraries are all about.
Ding, 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 ding.
This PSA brought to you by.
So
we're excited.
So, yeah, that's going to be really awesome, and I know you're excited about putting that together, and it's going to be a really cool event. So obviously that has been in the news locally. That made the national news, and this is what we're talking about earlier today. What should we talk about? What's been big in the news recently? The Supreme Court has been big in the news recently. We've every single day.
SCOTUS,
it seems,
as SCOTUS, I like to call them, Aaron. Hashtag SCOTUS.
Hashtag SCOTUS. Yeah. God.
It's going to be that kind of show.
Oh,
Aaron.
My Lord. We live in the modern world.
Hashtag SCOTUS.
Oh, my God. As long as you're not doing the, like,
OMG.
The hashtag thing.
OMG. Hashtag
OMG. OMG. LOL. BRB. Hashtag SCOTUS. Back in my day. You
kids
hit that
the
sign
Twitter.
To make a to return someone's call. What did we use the pound sign for on
I don't,
the phone?
It was *69.
It
got
was star
you the 69
to respond to. Like the pound sign has just always been there for no purpose whatsoever.
Right.
That's why we use it now. Yeah. Anyway.
Back to SCOTUS.
Back to SCOTUS, yeah. So many cases in the news just in the last 5 days, 6 days.
Right.
So we figured we'd talk about the Supreme Court, which I'm excited about. And I warned you that this is going to be a particularly nerdy day for me, at least, because I minored in public law when I was in grad school. So I can pull all kinds of obscure text out of nowhere.
Right. I think this will be a classic book chat, Aaron versus Susan,
yes.
Because you're going to go super nerdy. I'm imagining some classic tomes and some deep thoughts. And I've got like summer reading, beach reading thrillers.
Okay. Oh, perfect. Because I've got none of this is a summer reading, beach reading thriller. I guess this one here might be a little scary, but
you've all been warned.
Yes, you've all been warned. Okay, you start.
Okay, I'll start.
Yeah.
So these are books
about the Supreme Court.
Yes,
books inspired by the Supreme Court as a topic.
Right.
Yeah.
So the first one that came to my mind is a book called Murder in the Supreme Court, and it's by Margaret Truman, and she is the daughter of President Truman, and she wrote a gazillion. Well, she wrote lots of nonfiction, but she wrote a gazillion. I counted.
It's a gazillion
novels. That's called the Capital Crime Series, and it's Murder in the White House, Murder on Pennsylvania Avenue. One of my favorites I brought is Murder at the Library of Congress.
Awesome.
So if you like murder mysteries and you like crime fiction and you have any interest in DC and landmarks and politics, they're super fun. There's not lots of sex, there's not lots of violence, they're really just great mysteries, and there's tons of them.
Awesome.
So
I've never heard Murder at the Library of Congress.
And if you look at it, and you don't have to read them, they aren't series, they're stand alone novels.
Uh-huh.
And she's got some characters that recur. So, like, one of them is an ex-CIA person, one is a gallery, one's an or a gallery owner, one's an archivist, but you don't have to read them in series, so you could pick up any of them. There's Murder at the Smithsonian, Murder at the FBI, Murder in Georgetown, Murder at the Kennedy Center.
Wow.
They're super fun, and if you love mysteries and you've never read them, and you like them, they're not the cozy mysteries, but they're not the super way out there thrillers. They're just really good.
I like it.
Well-done mysteries in great settings, and there's lots of them.
Awesome. Okay.
Margaret Truman, the Capital Crime Series, thought of is Murder in the Supreme Court.
Does it follow like a particular detective or investigator throughout?
No,
or is it different cast of characters?
Some of them recur, but you can pick them up anywhere and you won't be confused.
All right. Awesome. I'm feeling bad now because you're going to come with all of these like really exciting and fun books. And I'm like, well, if you really want to understand the Supreme Court and how it works,
lay it on me. Because all of my knowledge is from these books.
Okay, good.
Really,
good.
That's a dangerous thing. So.
Okay, so if you want something that's interesting, nonfiction about the Supreme Court and how it works. There's so many sort of classic Supreme Court cases that go all the way back through American history. One of the more famous is a case called Gideon v. Wainwright, which was in the 1960s, I believe, essentially giving it's a procedural case that I think, if I'm remembering right, gave criminal defendants the right to an attorney. One of the cases that did that.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned this because we were just talking about Gideon v. Wainwright at the breakfast table this morning.
Really?
Said no one ever. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Aaron. Oh, that look.
Susan Brown and her final appearance here on WCHL.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, the book is called Gideon's Trumpet by Anthony Lewis. Anthony Lewis? Yes. And it's the case in which the U.S. Supreme Court decided that criminal defendants have the right to an attorney even if they can't afford it. And there's all this due process and procedure in the Constitution. It wasn't until 50 years ago that it was ruled that you, in fact, have a right to be represented by a lawyer in court.
Wow. Now, that's interesting.
It's ridiculous. And the way that this happened, it was a guy, Clarence Gideon. You see a picture of him. This is like this old guy who was arrested, tried, convicted without an attorney, without being granted an attorney or the right to an attorney, and couldn't afford one. So he winds up in prison. And he spends his time in prison basically teaching himself the law and handwriting all of these letters to courts of appeals and sort of appealing himself up to the Supreme Court. And it costs to have an attorney and to get a case up there. It costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. This guy like does it himself from his jail cell, gets to the Supreme Court, wins.
This should be a movie.
It is a movie.
When does he play the trumpet?
Throughout the entire
movie.
Really? Yeah, it's basically just, it's this whole big trumpet concert, starring Henry Fonda.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Are you making this up?
Starring Henry Fonda as Clarence
Earl
Gideon.
So is the book a novel or is it nonfiction?
No, it's nonfiction.
Wow.
Starring Henry Fonda as Clarence Earl Gideon and John Houseman as Earl Warren.
Wow.
It did not win him an Oscar, but the movie exists. And the book is really good. So and
Gideon's Trumpet.
Classic nonfiction book about the Supreme Court. So that's number one.
Okay. So this is where I get a little bit more heft to my book talks.
That was the lightest one I've got. So,
so I love graphic novels.
Okay.
But I tend not to read the sort of capes and tights and flying superheroes. And there's lots of great graphic novels
so
out there for adults.
So if you don't read graphic novels about capes and tights, then no Supreme Court for you, then, basically?
I hadn't even thought about that. Well done. So the
Super
one that
Scalia
I...
Super flying. Okay, I'm done.
I didn't even know that this existed, but I'm so glad it does.
Uh-huh.
The United States Constitution, a graphic adaptation. It's the U.S. Constitution.
Okay.
In graphic novel form.
Mm.
And it's awesome. I started reading it this afternoon when I was looking around for things, and it's just so well done. It's really, really smart. It's for adults. It's in the adult section, but I think that older kids would also dig it. And it's just really, really clever. And there's lots of great graphic novels for adults, too, that are historically based. So there's there's ones based around World War I and II. There's all kinds of historical ones. But this is one that is in our collection in the 320s. And it's a graphic novel adaptation of the U.S. Constitution.
Awesome. That's a really good introduction to what can be a complicated topic, too. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it gives you the history of it up through modern day and different presidents.
Nice.
It's got different chapters on the different amendments. It's great.
Cool. So, all right. So, I'm going to... I can't help it. I'm going to be super nerdy today. So,
do it.
All right. So, I went to grad school at Rutgers. I think this guy graduated from Rutgers, which was why I got assigned this book in the first place. But it is a book called Deciding to Decide by H.W. Perry Jr. It got published... this is in the 90s, I think. Yeah, you give me that look. But this is a good book. Just shut up, everyone out there. This is a good book. It's a page-turner.
What's it called again?
Deciding to Decide by H.W. Perry. Okay, so the Supreme Court gets a couple thousand appeals every single year, like so many thousand or about 1,000 cases or so get appealed to the Supreme Court every year. They maybe take 150, 200 of them. How do they decide on which cases to take? It's actually a really interesting series of conversations that happen behind the scenes. The clerks get involved. There's strategy involved. Like, do I... because there's non-justice on the court. It takes five, obviously, to win, but it only takes four to agree to hear a case. So if you're one of four people and you want to hear this case, but what if the other five vote against me? Should I not accept the case in the first place, or should we wait until a better case comes along? And there's so much strategy and discussion and talk and thought that goes into it, and it really affects how the Supreme Court works and why... Like, this same-sex marriage case that came in 2015, as opposed to them deciding in Windsor 2 years ago to do what they did last week. What Perry did, the Supreme Court's a really, like, closed-off institution. They don't allow cameras in there. There's a lot of secrecy about it, and it's a court of law, so a lot of the conversations happen behind closed doors, and the public doesn't really, you know, they don't broadcast it on C-SPAN. But what Perry did was he went in and he interviewed dozens of current and former Supreme Court justices and law clerks, and really got a better sense of how the court actually works than anyone had before. And it's actually a really interesting book. There's a lot of interviews and stuff. So.
And so this...
I was
Googling on my phone because it made me think of a book, and I don't think it's the same book. There was a book that came out, I want to say, maybe it could be the same book. It was the 80s or 90s, and it was behind the scenes.
Yes.
It was one of the first times, like, you got a behind the scenes.
The Brethren.
No. There's the Brethren and the Nine. But this was one that was very well received. I'm going to have to find the name of it. I don't think we're talking about the same book.
Probably not, because there have been a few.
But this was like one of the first ones where you actually went behind the scenes.
The Brethren
and they really
was
talked
the first,
it.
And that got kind of criticized. The Nine is more recent, and that was better. Deciding to Decide is in there, and there's a couple other ones.
That one sounds really good.
Because it focuses on a part of the Supreme Court that you don't really think about, which is the earlier decision that we're going to take the case in the first place, which is sometimes an equally fascinating process.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Well done.
I have tape over the bridge on my glasses today.
Okay,
white tape on my Coke bottle lenses.
The last one I've got does a librarian's heart proud, Aaron. So when I think Supreme Court, I just think lawyers, and it's summer, summer reading, again, brain candy by the pool kind of books.
Oh, this is going to be Grisham, isn't it?
It's not going to be Grisham.
Oh, it's not going to be Grisham. Okay.
Scott Turow.
Oh, Scott Turow. Yeah, that was my second guess.
So, Presumed Innocent, of course, was, an awesome legal thriller. And then I actually loved it. Took him out. He wrote some books in between, but then, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, maybe, he finally did a follow-up to Presumed Innocent just called Innocent, which... was a big book when it came out, and if you didn't get a chance to read it, it's very, very good. So Presumed Innocent and Innocent. And then I think we've talked about this book before. He wrote a great nonfiction book called 1L, which is about first year in law school, which is a great, if you love those kinds of books that, again, take you behind the scenes.
And if you're like in college and thinking about going to law school, that's a must read.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So Scott Turow's books, those two novels, and 1L would be my other recommendation.
1L is part of the reason why I stand here before you today. That's not even a lie. Okay.
Your turn.
So my last one, and this is sort of thinking about the Supreme Court's ruling on same-sex marriage last Friday, and obviously, like, proponents of gay marriage were just huge fans of this decision and very excited and still excited to this day. But, like, what is going to be the effect of this decision on public opinion? Is there going to be a backlash? What are other political actors going to do on the state level, on the local level? We're starting to see those kind of backlashes in Texas and Alabama and North Carolina with the magistrate recusal bill and all of this in anticipation of the court's decision. And now that it's happened, there are counties in states in the South. I know Alabama's one, and there's Texas counties that are doing this too, and I want to say Arkansas, where they're just refusing to issue marriage licenses, period. And this is something that actually tends to recur a lot of times when you have a social movement that takes its case to the Supreme Court, which most social movements either start out doing or eventually do. What is actually the reaction when you get a Supreme Court ruling in your favor? This actually tends to recur. When a social movement wins in court, you get this backlash. What's the long-term effect on public opinion? Does it actually make a difference? Would it be better to go through the legislative system, even though that might take longer? There's a book on all of this called The Hollow Hope by Gerald Rosenberg, which is actually a little bit, it's the scary part that I mentioned, because Rosenberg's conclusion is it's actually not necessarily the best idea for a social movement to go through the courts, because you get the backlash, you don't get the bump in public opinion, and you get additional sort of institutional obstacles that are placed in front of you, like what's happening for gay couples across the South. And kind of the same thing happened after Brown versus Board of Education required desegregation. You had certain counties, and there was one in Virginia that just said, okay, well, if we have to desegregate the public schools, then we're just not going to have public schools at all, and we're going to take our ball and go home. And there was a period when they didn't have public schools in this one county in Virginia, kind of the same thing that's happening
That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that thinking that way and that correlation.
Yeah. And
what's the book called?
The Hollow Hope by Gerald Rosenberg. Really, really interesting book. And again, if you're a fan of this decision by the Supreme Court, celebrate it for now. But do think about this, because this is something that does tend to happen. And it's something that also needs to be overcome down the road. And kind of the same thing happened with the desegregation ruling. Roberts Board of Education was 1954. Wasn't until 1964 that Congress stepped in with the Civil Rights Act, and in those 10 years, almost no desegregation at all, because you had 10 years of state and local authorities just dragging their feet forever. So it actually took Congress acting.
I come to the table with some legal thrillers, and you just made a really astute analysis.
Gerald Rosenberg did. I'm just passing
still,
the
you're
word
sounding
along.
Pretty good, Aaron.
I don't necessarily
sound
agree
pretty
with
good.
It, but it's a book that's worth
it's
reading.
It's very
so,
interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. I will also say that Susan McGuire, who you've met, mm-hmm. who's been on the air and is our awesome new reader services coordinator, is starting a library Tumblr, and she's going to be putting
nice.
these books that we talk about on there. So folks that hear a book here, and we'll try and put some lists in other social media type places, but she had the very good idea of maybe we should put these out there.
So is there a specific website that people can go to? Is it
It's out there
we'll
on the interweb somewhere.
Okay.
It's coming soon. I'll have more details next week. How's
All right,
that?
Awesome. So next week, we'll preview Omar Khoury again.
Yes.
So we'll talk a little bit more about that because that's going to be next week, Wednesday at 6:30. But until then, Susan Brown, thanks so much.
Always a good time, Aaron. Thanks.